from bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. How you doing? Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. Another wonderful afternoon. It's been weather-wise here in the great city. Temperatures around 16, 17 degrees again. We'll talk about that in a minute because that has been making the national news today, the temperatures. I can guess that you can guess how it has been making the news. Broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, richieallen.co.uk, and as usual, TuneIn Radio and many other places as well. You can catch the programme. Brilliant to be with you. Looking forward to this programme. Let's do it then. Let's do it now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Matt Landman, who was on the program over a year ago, a couple of years ago, Matt is the producer, the man behind Frankenskies, the movie. Matt returns to the program live from Washington, D.C. later on in the second hour. Before that, Tony Gosling, the journalist, the presenter of the politics show at BCFM in Bristol. Tony will join me. He was due to be on the programme yesterday. Didn't work out, but he's here today and will be with me in about 20 minutes' time. A packed old programme today, as usual. If there's something you'd like to contribute, you can do it by tweeting at Richie Allen Show. That's all you have to do. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. I'll be delighted to hear from you. I'm going to crack on. There's much to do. And I'm flying blind. I've got a lot of manual stuff to do today. My player, my very expensive player, my Radiomation radio player has crashed. So I'm doing everything manually. So sometimes I might announce something and it mightn't play when it was meant to play, you know? There might be a miscue or a misfire here and there. But anyway. Right, let's do it. Michael Cohen is testifying before Congress again as we speak. He is a former lawyer for Donald Trump. You know this, and you know that he's off to jail right soon for previously lying to Congress about paying hush money to one of Trump's mistresses. He's also been convicted of tax evasion. He's going to prison for 3 years. He won't serve 3 years, but that's what's going to happen to him. Now, the former Trump lawyer said that he was giving the committee a copy of a $35,000 check that Trump signed in August 2017 to pay him back. Okay. He also gave the panel a copy of the wire transfer of his $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels. He went on to say that he regrets lying to the First Lady Melania Trump. Trump said he didn't know anything about the check, the hush money. He said that on the record, Trump. Anyway, look, let's move on to more important things, if it is really important. What about the hacked Democratic emails and the leak of those emails? Did Donald Trump know about those in advance? Well, here's Michael Cohen. Let's see what he says.
As I earlier stated, Mr. Trump knew from Roger Stone in advance about the WikiLeaks drop of emails. In July of 2016, days before the Democratic convention, I was in Mr. Trump's office when his secretary announced that Roger Stone was on the phone. Mr. Trump put Mr. Stone on the speakerphone. Mr. Stone told Mr. Trump that he had just gotten off the phone with Julian Assange, and that Mr. Assange told Mr. Stone that within a couple of days, there would be a massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign. Mr. Trump responded by stating to the effect, "Wouldn't that be great?"
Now, Trump denies this. He's been meeting with Kim Jong-un in Vietnam, is that right, today? And he's tweeted to his legions of followers that Cohen is an admitted perjurer and liar. Fair enough. He said, she said, or he said, he said. Cohen also said today that Donald Trump is a racist. What did he say about that exactly to back up those claims?
Mr. Trump is a racist. The country has seen Mr. Trump court white supremacists and bigots. You have heard him call poorer countries shitholes. His private, in private, he is even worse. He once asked me if I could name a country run by a black person that wasn't a shithole. This was when Barack Obama was president of the United States.
Ooh-er.
And while we were once driving through a struggling neighborhood in Chicago, he commented that only black people could live that way. And he told me that black people would never vote for him because they were too stupid. And yet, I continued to work for him.
Well, that's all hearsay. Now, you know, there's not been any bigger critic of Donald Trump in the independent media than myself. He might very well have said those things, but it's hearsay. It's Cohen's word against Trump. Trump's followers point out that Cohen is using lawyers connected to the Clintons. It's believed among Trump's followers that this is a Clinton coup on the Trump presidency and that none of this amounts to more than a hill of beans. That's what Trump's followers and supporters are saying. Anyway, listen. It's his word against Trump's, but here's why it doesn't matter. It is the Truman Show. It's a staged production because Donald and his alleged enemies, the Clintons, serve the same masters. I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is live 24-hour-a-day drama. Okay, think back to 24 with Kiefer Sutherland. This is what they've got the public hooked into now. Why? Well, I think it's to convince you of one thing and one thing only, that it is real. To keep you engaged. And I've said it before, it's a puppet show, television. I wouldn't be surprised if the people who scripted The Sopranos and the people who scripted Breaking Bad and all the other brilliant television shows we've seen in recent years, if some of those people have a hand in these plot lines, it is nothing but theatre, a massive smokescreen. And that's all it is, in my opinion, right? 5:09. The foreign ministers of Russia, India and China have held a joint news briefing, this was last night, where among other issues they discussed the situation in Venezuela. I wonder, will what they had to say be of any consolation to the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro? You'll hear the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, followed by his Chinese counterpart, who, of course, is Wang Yi. But, of course, you knew that anyway, didn't you? You're so well informed. Sergei Lavrov and Wang Yi. Have a listen.
We see outrageous attempts to artificially create a pretext for military intervention. The US is assuming the right to use force wherever it wants to topple regimes, which, for whatever reason, dissatisfies them. The US is trying to substitute international law with those rules. So reach your own conclusions. Which rules have the Americans prepared for the Latin American region?
Venezuela's problems are purely domestic in nature, and they should be resolved based on country's constitution and law. Everyone should refrain from interfering in Venezuela's domestic affairs.
Brazil has announced it's not going to participate or provide its territory for American aggression towards Venezuela. Not from a single Latin American country, including members of the Lima Group, have I heard words of support for military intervention.
Yeah, the thing is, Venezuela is a lot further away from Russia than, say, Syria is. What are China? What is China? What is Russia going to do in the event, as we heard on this program yesterday, that the United States is mobilizing for an invasion of the sovereign state of Venezuela? What will those allies of Maduro actually do at that stage? 12:08, Tony Gosling has checked in. How you, T? He'll be with us in about 10 minutes' time. Climate change is all over the news today. Why? Well, not far from here is a place called Saddleworth Moor. I've been there a few times with the future Mrs. Allen. In fact, we've been there recently. Now, the fire is out now. It was reported on overnight and this morning on the BBC. Fire crews have extinguished. Fire crews have put out a very, very large blaze on moorland in West Yorkshire. It was actually described by witnesses as apocalyptic. Massive flames, keep that in mind. Big, big, big flames. Started at 7:30 last night, covered about 1.5 square kilometres of land. So this was all over the news overnight. The BBC were there this morning at 7:00 when the fire was still burning. And I want you to hear a reporter for BBC Radio 5 Live, and he's feeding into, well, the evergreen Nicky Campbell. Listen to what the 5 Live reporter says, and keep your ears pricked up, dear listener, because you might catch something very interesting in the middle of this.
Fire crews from West Yorkshire and Greater Manchester are on scene, as I say. They didn't fight the fire during the night because it's just too dangerous for them. One fire officer again told me he was surprised at the height of the flames, because normally on a moorland fire, it's very low level. It's just little tiny flames that are burning away, but they're very hard to put out. These are big flames that are burning at the moment. Mm. Now, last summer's fires in the area lasted for weeks, but that was in the middle of summer. This is in the middle of February. And just to give you an idea, last year at this time of year, I had to drive over this road, and it was almost like having to cut your way through the snow. It was so deep. And here we are with the first moorland fires of the year again.
Okay, thanks very much indeed, Nick. In February, 5 minutes past seven.
Yeah, in February, Nicky, in February. Won't somebody please think of the planet, Nicky? There was something Nicky missed, though. Something his reporter said that Nicky didn't quite catch. Did you catch it, dear listener? I bet you caught it.
One fire officer again told me he was surprised at the height of the flames, because normally on a moorland fire, it's very low level. It's just little tiny flames that are burning away, but they're very hard to put out. These are big flames that are burning at the moment.
These are big flames. Normally on moor fires, very small flames. Big flames. Accelerant, anybody? Accelerant, anybody? Possibly an accelerant, maybe? And I don't mean the big bad powers that be. Maybe somebody making a bit of mischief, maybe? Did something to cause it? Nicky Campbell didn't jump on that, you know? So the flames are never like that. It's been called apocalyptic. What could have happened? No. Just go into full propaganda mode. That's what the BBC did. Because just after Nicky finished speaking with the on-scene reporter, his bestie, Rachel Burden, interviewed a meteorologist. And this is good fun.
Let's speak to Stephen Keats, a meteorologist at the Met Office. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
Can we assume that these fires are connected to the warmer weather?
Well, it's obviously not for me to say how this started, but...
It's not for me to say how this started, but... Here we go.
There was certainly the weather we've had over the last couple of months and the weather we've had over recently is certainly not going to help the situation. So we've had basically January and February have been drier than average, only around about 40 to 50% of the rainfall, for example, in the area of Yorkshire where we've been reporting this morning. And we've had some very high temperatures. We were up at 18, 19 degrees yesterday in that part of the world. The average for this time of year is near 8 degrees. So really exceptional, record-breaking, as we know. It's not ideal conditions. So you imagine the ground is pretty dry, the peat is probably pretty dry, and certainly a lot drier than what we'd expect at this time of year.
Is that right? Because it still feels quite kind of boggy and wet underfoot, but it...
Good stuff, Rachel! Well done, old girl! Is that right? Because it's only been a couple of days of 18 degrees. Those of us who walk in the countryside and in the moors, and, dear listener, I do, all the time, with our doggy... I nearly said my pet name for the future, Mrs. Allen, which you can probably guess. The French lady that I live with, and I and our dog, go out to these places. We go to the woodlands, we go to the moors. And it's not bone dry underfoot. I was only there last weekend. It's not bone dry at all. It's very wet and very boggy. Good girl, Rachel.
It's not in these kind of areas that the peat will be dry enough to really generate a lot of fire. Like,
yeah, good stuff.
This
it would appear so, yes. And
it would appear so. We've had a couple of days of warm weather and fucking ground is bone dry.
With limited rainfall compared to what we'd expect this time of year, that's silly. It's not going to help the situation.
Yeah. Bullshit. Right. So the picture is starting to become a bit clearer now. Well done, Rachel, by the way. Listen, according to the weatherman, I don't know who this guy is, Steve Keats or Stephen Keats, it's climate change.
So knowing that, and we've been talking about this over the last couple of days, can we enjoy this lovely weather without feeling kind of slightly guilty or anxious about the long-term future?
Well, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because blue skies and warmth in February is always a bonus, isn't it? Let's be honest, for most of us. However, you know, it's always a but, isn't there?
It's always a but.
And I think, you know, this just proves one of those buts that really do exist. So for a lot of people, I think...
This just proves one of those buts that really does exist. This guy's genius. I defer to this guy's broadcasting Excellent.
You know, enjoy the weather. It's definitely a bonus compared to what we had this time last year. Remember, there's extremes at the other end of the scale. But every sort of upside has a downside. One hand giveth, one hand taketh away.
One hand giveth, one hand taketh away. That's a meteorological term now. Holy Jesus.
And you know, this is just an example of that, really.
You speak the truth. Thank you very much.
You speak the truth, says Rachel Burton. Thank you very much. Didn't understand a word you just said there, but you speak the truth. And if you remember, a BBC employee sent this programme last year a circular, a piece of paper that was sent around to the BBC production crews all over the country. And that piece of paper said, the climate change issue has been settled. Climate change is real, therefore you don't need to go. And the last thing you need to do is to go and get any balance on the subject. That's BBC Radio 5 Live this morning. Massive big flames. Only 18 degrees over a couple of days. Very wet and boggy marshland, moorland, and yet massive big flames. Well, it must be climate change, folks. What else could it possibly be? This is the Richie Allen Show. How you doing? Are you well? It is the 27th of February 2019, and my name is Richie Allen. Always a pleasure to be with you. It's great to be back, it really is. This is David Gray in Babylon. Tony Gosling is next. David Gray's Babylon on the Richie Allen Show, 21 and a half minutes past the hour. It is Wednesday's programme. What a week we're having here. What a week we're having. You know all there is to know about Tony Gosling. He presents a terrific programme every week for Bristol, for Bristol's BCFM, a terrific radio show on an excellent community radio station. I've listened to it. I've been invited on it before. It was an honour to be on it. Met Tony many years ago. He's worked for the BBC. He's as honest and as decent and as ethical a journalist as I've met in my time in this particular business. Now, spoke to you yesterday. I've been very sick for a bit and I missed it. That Ofcom has decided to investigate Tony's programme at the behest of the UKLFI, which is UK Lawyers for Israel, who've complained to Ofcom that Tony's programme was used for the propagation of conspiracy theories and extremist views. Delighted to welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling. Tony, how are you?
Oh, fine. Thanks, Richie. I should be asking you that, really. You've obviously had a bit of a difficult time of it. How's things with you?
Things are good, mate. You had a proper dose, not man flu. I had pneumonia. It was rotten, but I'm back on my feet. I missed all of this.
You're back up from the depths of the ocean.
I am indeed.
Smashed your way back up through the ice, and you're with us again.
And I'm here again. Now, this is serious stuff. I wasn't being sycophantic last night when I talked about this on the programme. You're an excellent journalist. I've never known you to make a claim about something unless you had proof that you could prove what it was you were saying. I've often heard you say, it's my belief that, or I have a suspicion that, but I can't prove it yet. It's always been excellent. This is a nonsense, this. Where's this coming from, this UK Lawyers for Israel? Who are these people?
There's a couple of things which, if we just take a step back for a second, are just basic principles of journalism, which we can see that the London media are falling down all the time on these things. One is the separation of fact and speculation. I mean, we've heard, for example, just an example, the enormous so-called fact of the go-ahead of things like HS2, Hinkley C, these massive projects where billions of pounds of public money are being spent. Then we find actually, well, there isn't actually the money for them. So what you've got there is the mainstream press spinning something as a fact that this is happening, this is about to happen. And we find out later, well, actually what they were doing was they were just repeating something that had been sent to them on a press release by people who had a vested interest in those stories. So fact and speculation should never, ever be mixed up. And that is exactly what happens when it comes to conspiracy theories. So this is what you'll get on many of the mainstream press. I did an interview on Andrew Neil's program, The Daily Politics Show, a few years ago, where he introduced me with a piece which was about 3 or 4 minutes long. One of his minions put together a mixture of all sorts of real conspiracies, things like the JFK assassination by the CIA, the death of Princess Diana, what I believe is the murder of Princess Diana, assassination effectively is a political murder, and things like the moon landings. You know, so what they were doing was deliberately mixing up fact and speculation and then saying, oh, well, here's someone else that does that, Tony Gosling. My first point to them was, well, you've just done what journalists are supposed not to do, the opposite of journalism, and you've been mixing up these things. So you should never do that. And I do everything I can to not be afraid to speculate, but to make sure it's couched in that those terms of speculation. And when we know something as an absolute fact, then we can present it as an absolute fact. And that is an easy thing to do if you're just simply churning out the government rhetoric, because you'll keep your job. But what you're doing is you're betraying your listeners and your viewers and your readers. So it depends where your loyalties lie. Mine, I think, I hope anyway, are always to the listeners, the readers, whatever, you know, in situations like that. The other thing I'd say, Richie, about journalism is that you should be very careful about if you're investigating and criticizing, that you should be careful about the sort of spectrum between people who are poor and defenseless and people who are rich and powerful. So you should never be doing what the, for example, the Daily Mail and the Daily Express do quite a lot, is, you know, having a go at people who are basically trying desperately to survive on a council estate or on a traveller site somewhere. And you should be focusing your investigative efforts on the rich and powerful. Those are the people that we should be keeping an eye on. And so that's basically my, in a nutshell, my philosophy of what I thought I was doing when I joined the BBC back in 1989, and by 93 I'd found out actually that was almost an impossible thing to do at the BBC.
I've been that soldier. There's a little bit of echo. It's gone now, thankfully. I've been that soldier, not at the BBC, not for as long as you were there, Tony. I did bits and pieces for the BBC in the late 90s, early noughties, but it was just guest stuff, regional reporting in Ireland, very, very briefly. But look, I've been that soldier. They've taken exception, these UK lawyers for Israel, to interviews you've done with people I have a lot of time for, even though one of them won't speak to me. It's Tony Greenstein, isn't it? And Mikko Paled. And they've alleged that those interviews were basically anti-Semitic. They also took offension to the mention of the Rothschild banking dynasty on the programme, and very, 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 very salient and very fair questions about what happened in Manchester on the 22nd of May. And that's what they've taken exception to.
In a nutshell, the complaint was, yes, conspiracy theories. Now, I pointed out to Ofcom, which they may not have known, that the term conspiracy theory was invented in 1967. We know exactly when it was invented, because it was designed to try to stop particularly a lawyer called Mark Lane, who was a very close friend of John F. Kennedy's. And the idea was to come up with a term that could be repeated again and again across the US mass media, which would demonize investigative journalists who were starting to get to the truth about the assassination of John F. Kennedy being from within the state. You know, in other words, say we had Lyndon Johnson involved, we had the boss of the FBI, the boss of the CIA, all these people were involved in the assassination, because they had to be, because they would have to be involved in the cover-up. And that term, conspiracy theory, was put out at that time. We've got the documents. They've been released under Freedom of Information and are actually declassified documents that show you that's exactly what the Central Intelligence Agency was thinking about doing. And I was amazed today. I mean, things come full circle, don't they? Just listening to the World Service today, casually, and I hear in the background, and now we're going to speak to the former CIA expert, who is now working at Chatham House. And they don't often tell you what Chatham House is all about. Now, this is the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which the BBC used religiously. They did when I was there. And what you're getting basically is you're getting the intelligence service line from places like Chatham House in London, and you're getting the same sort of thing from the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States, the Institutes for International Affairs. They're right across Europe. There's a big one in Austria. Most of the countries of Europe have got an Institute for International Affairs. But I thought it might be worth just saying briefly what was behind that, because this was a Cecil Rhodes project. He wanted to set up the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London, and the Council on Foreign Relations in the States, the other institutes for international affairs came from that. And this was Cecil Rhodes's will. He wanted because he was the guy that basically exploited most of South and East Africa. And he could see the British Empire spreading at an incredible rate. And he and some of his friends believed that if the British Empire was to carry on as it was, that they could take over the world. So in his will, he said that they should set up a secret society to fund think tanks and to fund a privately run foreign policy in order to push for this this empire to extend, to take over the world. Well, obviously that is not going to happen anymore, but the institutions that he funded still exist, and that's what we're hearing most of the time as the so-called experts in the BBC, is the legacy of Cecil Rhodes and effectively what is the voice of the British and the American and other NATO intelligence services.
I want to stay with this for a minute, this Ofcom complaint. What's the... The decision is going to be made and announced on Thursday, I think you told me.
We're not sure. We're expecting possibly Thursday, possibly tomorrow, yeah. It may be that it's an awkward one for them, so they have to delay it a bit. But we'll see. We're expecting tomorrow.
This particular complaint against you comes at a time when claims against people of anti-Semitism are... Well, it's like a dozen or two dozen a day against various people, various broadcasters.
Yeah, we've just had today this statement from Chris Williamson saying that he believes that there's been more made of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party than really exists.
But then he backed down from it. He's got a yellow streak a mile wide across his back. He then apologised and said he was wrong.
Didn't he?
Well, you see, I wouldn't have done. I'd rather do a job, Tony, for a living that I really despise, something I really didn't want to do, rather than betray my principles.
He's likely to end up like Ken Livingstone, expelled from the party. He's obviously decided he's got a much wider job to do for his constituents, and he's going to just doff his cap and say sorry, even though he doesn't necessarily mean it. A bit like Jeremy Corbyn has said he's backing a people's vote, even though I don't think really mean it. So there's lots and lots of pressure being put.
Gosling. Don't start with that nonsense now. Much as I love you, I think you're amazing. Don't start with that defending Corbyn nonsense. We'll come to that in a minute. But before we get to that. Before we have a big argument, if I was your station manager, I would go to bat for you every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Nobody would tell me that I had to take you off the air or to temper the editorial of your programme or to moderate it. I would say, to hell with that. Does your station manager support you?
He's been supporting me, which is great, actually. Pat Hart, he does something called the One Love Breakfast every morning. Literally, he's 3 hours on the radio, or it's Monday to Thursday every week, doing a sort of part political, bit of a jokey kind of show. But it's every morning on the radio here in Bristol. A lot of people listen to it. For a long time, it was shared on all the community channels in the city. That isn't happening right now. But the reason he said he's backing me is because he believes that what we're doing is important anti-racist work. And the reason I say that is because this specific program that Ofcom have filed this complaint and investigation about at the behest of UK Lawyers for Israel is, I think it was the 23rd of November, right at the end of November last year. And what we were doing was doing, I think, something which is really important. The previous 2 months or so, we'd been using clips from almost all the Israeli cabinet. Now, this is something I haven't heard any of the national press doing. We want to know, who is the Israeli cabinet? What do they think? So I've been airing lots of clips from some of the pretty, well, I have to say, extreme elements within that cabinet who have been supporting the Nation State Bill, which is this apartheid bill that's passed through the Israeli Knesset last year. And so we had been airing those for many weeks. And then I thought, look, what we need to do is we need to really drill into the philosophy of Zionism, and particularly the Likud party and the racist brand of Zionism, which is coming to the fore. And we've seen just literally this week, it looks now as if the Kahnists in Israel are going to be coming into the Knesset, because Netanyahu wants them to, in order to prop up his coalition collapse, basically. And these are Jewish extremists. They are into Jewish supremacy, this kind of thing, and so that's why I wanted to look deeply into the whole Zionist philosophy. And because we've had all this stuff with ISIS, haven't we? The most powerful tool of ISIS has been their ability to recruit people based on an interpretation of the Quran, this whole idea of creating a caliphate. So what they're doing is they're pulling at the heartstrings of people, saying, well, it says in the Quran here that we need to, you know, sacrifice ourselves to bring about a caliphate in the Middle East. Or I don't actually think it says that, but it talks about a caliphate in the Middle East. So this has been used to recruit people into ISIS, and it's been very successful. We've had this case recently of the ISIS bride, Shamima Begum, and I did an article about that whole case in 2016 in November, which showed that the Turkish police had actually arrested the guy who recruited Shamima Begum and her friends. I think it was Amira Abbasay, and the more famous was Khadija Sultana. These are three kids from Bethnal Green in London who were recruited and brought to Turkey, to Istanbul, and then down to Gaziantep in southern Turkey, and then transferred to another handler to take them down to ISIS. Now, the crucial thing was the Turkish police had the laptop of her handler, the guy that recruited her online, that lured her over to Istanbul, and then met her at the bus station at the airport and went down to the south of Turkey with her. This is all online. It's all on the internet if you want to have a look. And so you can see the Western intelligence services, because it was a Canadian guy that had been recruiting this bloke, and it showed on his laptop he'd been talking to this Canadian intelligence guy, and he'd been promised, the bloke that was doing the recruiting for ISIS had been promised, well, if you do this for a while for us, then we'll give you a Canadian passport, you can come and live in Canada and get Canadian citizenship. He'd recruited something like 160 people for ISIS. So this is their lifeblood. So this is why I say that this hasn't been looked into, but not it hadn't been any publicity here in the UK at all, really, considering the importance of the Shamima Begum case. I'm amazed that hadn't really got out there. So if you want to find that, it's on Redress Online. It's called Did Canadian Taxpayers Foot Islamic State's Recruitment Bill?
Brilliant.
So that's
brilliant.
The article. But anyway, so that show we did on the 25th of November was looking at the Zionist philosophies. And I found there was a couple of people who'd written a book. One of the most fascinating, I thought, and articulate was this guy called David Livingstone, who lives over in Canada. And he's just got a book coming out on this very subject. And I thought, well, what is it that's driving the Zionist philosophy that gets loads of people into these far-right Zionist parties? Because they have religious beliefs of all sorts. You know, they say God gave us this land. We need to look at what exactly is it in the Bible that they're looking at. So anyway, that's what that show was about, and I can tell you the Israel lobby really didn't like it.
No, well, obviously not. That on this subject, there's so much to talk about between now and six, the top of the hour. Labour have just suspended Chris Williamson. So he has been suspended.
No, so, unbelievable.
So we live in a tyranny. A man speaks to a meeting. Let me just finish this point, though. I want to make this point. A man speaks to a meeting, and he tells those at a meeting that while anti-Semitism is wrong and it's bad and it's not good and all of that, that in his heart of hearts, he doesn't believe it's as bad as it has been claimed, and that traditionally this party is a party that rejects all of that sort of stuff. And for expressing that opinion, he's now effectively being kicked out of the party. See, this is a tyranny we live in.
Yeah, he's the guy who has been, first of all, he's been one of the main men on Venezuela. So he's been pointing out the BBC's absolutely ridiculous bias on their news bulletins about what's happening in Venezuela. The fact that it hasn't been reported that there are US sanctions on the country, which is one of the reasons why people are so hungry. Another reason is that the British have seized a load of Venezuelan assets and they're refusing to hand them over. Another reason why the country is hungry. So there, and whilst Maduro can be blamed to a certain extent, obviously, for the economic situation, we've got the international financial system, which has been attacking, using economic warfare, Venezuela for many years, ever since the Chavez era. But more importantly, I suppose, Chris Williamson has been digging into the Integrity Initiative and looking at the government funding for anti-Corbyn trolls. and MI6 trying to undermine Corbyn. Now, this has enormous echoes with the attacks on Harold Wilson in the 1970s, where the security services were actively trying to, actually at that time it was a prime minister, but now they are so brazen that they're even prepared to go for an attempt to oust a leader of the opposition. And Chris Williamson was the main person in the Labour Party who'd been exposing that and it really protecting our democracy. And I think that this is the influence of the security services on Tom Watson. Let's not forget the person who sponsored Tom Watson, who'd been critical of Chris Williamson, into become deputy Labour leader, in other words, because he had a big campaign which cost a lot of money, was Max Mosley, who was the son of Oswald Mosley, the fascist leader in the Second World War. And so Max, I'm afraid, is probably behind this, you know, is one of those people who's been pulling Tom Watson's strings and trying to make sure that anybody that supports Corbyn, particularly intelligent and vociferous people like Chris Williamson, are booted out. So this is, I mean, it's extremely, it's you know, and I agree.
Speculation. I mean, I don't like Mosley. None of us like Max Mosley, but we don't know this for a fact. It's just speculation.
That's right. I did say speculation.
Oh, no, you did. No, listen, you did. You made it loud and clear. I'm just making the point.
He's been bankrolling Tom Watson, so, you know, then you draw your own conclusions to that.
Corbyn, then, and Brexit. Listen, before we talk about Brexit, the Russian military chiefs believe that the United States is mobilising troops and is getting battle ready for an assault on Venezuela. What do you think?
Well, it's quite feasible, isn't it, because of all the oil. I mean, what we've seen there, of course, as well, is and I think this is another indication, Richie, of the big changes that we're seeing, is when you see an extreme propaganda campaign on the London media, and this business of what's happening in Venezuela on both the ITV Nightly News and the BBC National News at the weekend was extraordinary propaganda showing just entirely one side, and, you know, the various things I mentioned earlier not reported at all. So it's as if it's a one-sided, you know, this guy's just got to go. Well, he's surrounded in Brazil and Colombia by far-right regimes. The Brazilian one really is not, I mean, you could call him a Nazi, not even just a neo-Nazi, the new leader in Brazil. He's somebody who was agreeing with the death squads, for example, in the previous era, where Dilma Rousseff, who was president, she was subjected to and had for her friends killed by the death squads. And he's saying that he supports them. So we've got far right lunatics in Colombia and in Brazil, either side of Venezuela. I think the Americans do believe now they've got the country surrounded, and it could be they're trying to create a bloody civil war. I don't know if you saw the video I saw at the weekend, which was of the anti-Maduro supporters actually setting fire to these so-called aid trucks. It looked to me as if that's exactly what they were doing. So you've got agent provocateurs in there. That's what it seems to me, trying to create this crisis. Luckily, of course, Maduro's got a bit of support from outside, from the Russians, etc. But, you know, this could be a horrendous conflict. And, of course, if the US troops go in there saying that they're creating order, well, we know all they really want is the oil.
Do you know, I can't argue, I can't make a cogent argument against that for the sake of balance. I can't do it. Abby Martin did a brilliant interview with a guy called Alfred DeZayas. I took some of the audio and used it on Monday. He's the first guy to go into Venezuela in 20 years. And he went in on behalf of the United Nations. And he came out and his report basically contradicted everything that Western media had been saying about Venezuela in terms of the conditions that people are living on there. His report also contained his take on what's happened to the country, how the sanctions and everything else have reduced the country to the situation that it's in now. And in an excellent piece he did with Abby Martin, as I said, he said, you know, that he's not been able to get any take up on his report from either the BBC or, you know, any other UK or US news media organisation. Again, tyranny. These are tyrannical times.
It's you know what? It's like the Eye of Sauron, isn't it? You know, the idea that, well, Syria is now, ISIS has been destroyed. This creature of the NATO countries, this attempt at regime change in Syria, they thought they were being so smart, moving all these jihadi nutters from Libya over to Syria. And of course, Al Jafri, the UN ambassador from Syria, pointed out, he said, most of the people fighting, you call it a civil war, a vast majority of the people fighting in our country aren't Syrians. And so, hang on, it's not a civil war. You know, it's those basic stuff like that we're not hearing. But the attitude seems to me to be that the Pentagon-led, NATO-led, and one at a time, they're trying to pick various independent countries off. That seems to be what's going on. And, of course, this means there's potentially, anyway, in the future, an enormous conflict coming, because obviously there are other countries are aligning themselves with the Russians, the Chinese, other superpowers. And it seems as unless they do that, the US is and NATO is coming into – they get a choice. It's a bit like the jackals coming in. If your country doesn't do what it's told by the IMF, you know, basically people start dying, so you better do as what you're told by the IMF. And unless you do these, unless you behave yourself, you're going to get disruption in your country, because that's effectively what they've been doing with Libya. Is they've said, well, if Libya won't play ball, well, they can just have chaos. It's a terrific book by Dan Glazebrook, which is just really a collection of his articles, which is, I think, is the almost like the meme for the modern world, which is divide and ruin is his title of his book. And that's exactly what they're doing, is that they're creating chaos in these countries. And if they can't have control of them themselves, NATO, the Pentagon, AFRICOM, you know, this massive US Central Command structure, which supposedly covers the entire planet, entire Africa is organized by AFRICOM, which is based in Stuttgart in Germany. You know, it's this massive office of the Pentagon, which controls Africa or attempts to control Africa. And if you can't, if you don't just do as we say, all you're going to get in your country is total gangsterism, and which is exactly what we've seen happen to Libya, which led to the enormous influx of migrants across the Mediterranean and the migrant crisis, which has now brought us to the stage where certainly the Greeks and the Italians were desperate for a referendum like we had to get out of the EU, because Brussels has done absolutely nothing to stop this flow of migrants across the Mediterranean.
Brilliant stuff, Tony. And each time they do it, each decade they do it, each year they do it to another country, the blueprint is the same, and it's instantly recognisable. And it's happening, it has happened, and is happening in Venezuela. Right, let's move on. And before we talk about Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party's approach to leaving the European Union, I found it fascinating this morning to hear BBC Radio 5 presenter, not one of the anchors, but one of their, I think the Wake Up to Money guy, was speaking to a journalist in Germany, an English journalist in Germany, who was pointing out, even though he was very much pro-European Union, he was pointing out that the German government are particularly terrified of the UK leaving the European Union with no deal, because the German economy is in decline, of course, that's a fact. And things are not great there, and there's a huge worry about the impact that it would have on goods being sent to the UK from Germany. Now, that was an amazing thing, and it was shut down very quickly by the on-air BBC team. They very quickly moved on to something else. What's the Labour Party, what's Jeremy Corbyn playing at, having promised in the election manifesto a year and a half ago, or whatever it was, to honour the result of the referendum, to now be pledging to provide a people's vote on either May's deal or staying in the European Union? Tyranny, Tony.
Well, the reports yesterday, I mean, yesterday was a big day, wasn't it, for Brexit? We're basically hearing from the Labour Party that they're collapsing on their election commitment to see Brexit through, to honour the decision made by the people in June 2016. And the same from Theresa May, you know, we're going to be kicking the can down the road, it looks like now. I suppose it was almost inevitable that we see these sorts of betrayals of the voters. And, you know, this has been, I think it's been fascinating. It's an educational process for the voters. And I think there's, I mean, certainly my experience is quite a lot of people who voted Remain originally. I mean, we're given this line that, oh, there's loads of people out there that voted Brexit, but they've now changed their mind, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't believe that. I mean, what's I think has really happened is that quite a lot of people that voted Remain in the first place have just decided they want to go stick with the result of the referendum because that's what people decided and just get it over with and get it done. Certainly, that's the main message which has been coming from business is let's just get this sorted out, get it done, get rid of the uncertainty because the uncertainty is making business making it very difficult for business. But no, it looks like now, oh no, we want to have another referendum. Now, what's not, this is from Corbyn anyway. Now, hang on a minute, because what happens if that is all equally a knife-edge referendum? Are we going to have to sit through another 2 years of turmoil, of decision-making about Brexit? So you're basically just extending this horrendous 2 years of agony and domination of the airwaves by this particular topic? Why can't we just get it sorted? We've also got in the cabinet, we've got these various threats from cabinet ministers against Theresa May saying, look, unless you rule out a no deal, we're going to resign. Well, actually, what should happen if they're saying that publicly? Theresa May should sack them. And there's plenty of ERG and Brexit MPs who would be more than happy to step into the cabinet and do those jobs instead. But she hasn't done that. And that's really, I suppose, says more than anything else that Theresa May doesn't have the courage of her convictions, so she will not be seeing this through. We are going to have some sort of delay, and of course that delay could be rather a long time. It doesn't. I mean, I'm amazed that they haven't managed to just say, right, well, we're going to have the backstop will last for example, if the backstop kicks in, it will last 6 months and then it will be over. I mean, it just seems to me to be a basic thing that you have to say. You cannot allow us to be staying in the EU indefinitely. And this is also a big sellout of the unionists in Northern Ireland, which they should not be doing. You know, whether you agree or not, you know, these political deals should be being stuck to, not betrayed at the last minute. So, I just think we're seeing our politicians in their true light, and it's an education for the British public. If they ever thought that politicians were going to be honourable, do what they said they were supposed to do, well, we're now finding out that it's unravelling. But there is another side to all this, Richie, and that might just simply be that Theresa May is getting from her civil servants, look, we simply cannot do a no deal. We're not prepared for it. And that, of course, is her fault, nobody else's fault, that the resources have not been put into preparing for a no deal.
Well, that wouldn't be by accident. That wouldn't be accidental. That wouldn't just be mismanagement. That would be deliberate. Of course, the European Union were never going to agree to a temporary backstop arrangement in Northern Ireland because the European Union doesn't want the UK to leave. This has been a stitch up from day one, in my opinion. And as for how people see politicians, I came to the conclusion many years ago that the entire system has to be dismantled. We can never change our reality through the ballot box. Bernie Sanders is the proof of that. Jeremy Corbyn is the proof of it. Barack Obama is the proof of it. It doesn't matter who's in there. It never changes. If Jeremy Corbyn became Prime Minister sometime next year or even later this year, I guarantee you within a year and a half, the UK would be invading somewhere. I guarantee you that they would, and Corbyn would be endorsing it. That's the reality we live in.
No, I totally disagree with you.
I'm telling you, you and I will, much as I love you, we will agree to disagree on that forevermore.
Maybe dead, you know, for whatever reason. He may have a heart attack, you know, like John Smith had, something like that.
He's not a good man, Tony. This is not a decent man. Well, this is a horrible man, a fraud and a fake, who swore from the back benches for years that the European Union was a fascist dictatorship, that it destroyed industry, that it destroyed competition, that it drove down wages. This fucking bastard, I'm sorry for swearing, Tony, this is what he believes. He believes this, so he should be telling people this.
Well, he can't always, and no politician can always say exactly what they really believe.
Because
he's been boxed in by his Blairite MPs. We've now got this other party.
But he has the support of the country, T.
Which, by the way, is being secretly funded. For the next 6 months, we won't know where their money's come from because they've set up a private company to fund them rather than set up as a political party. So that's a complete con. So what's happening now is he's got loads of his Blairite MPs who are constantly threatening to him saying, well, we're going to leave the party, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And of course, these MPs have got a lot of sway.
Yeah, but so, but hang on, Tony. The members, the membership of the party overwhelmingly support Corbyn. So the MPs don't actually matter. What's to stop Corbyn for... Well, hang on a second. Hang on, let me just finish this point and I'll get out of your way. What's to stop Jeremy Corbyn going on television? I always say this about these frauds like Corbyn. They'll never have the opportunity again because it is fleeting and he will be gone. What's to stop him going on national television and saying to the membership, listen, this is what's really going on. You put me in charge here to do this, to do that, to do this. I can't do it because you have a bunch of tyrants, Iraq war hangovers that are preventing me doing this and doing that. That's what that's what he should do, go down in a blaze of glory. But he's a fraud to you.
Prince,
over to you.
Princess Diana tried that, didn't she, on Panorama?
Tony.
All I'm saying is that there is an immense amount of power within the parliamentary Labour Party as to what is the legislative programme going to be. That's the problem. And there are all sorts of people who are threatening. What they do is they basically threaten Corbyn. As we've seen today, the things like his allies, Chris Williamson, will be peeled away from him, will disappear because Corbyn hasn't towed the line. But I mean, to a certain extent, agree with you in that, he should be standing up to them because they have the attitude of give them an inch, they'll take a yard. As soon as you cave into them at all, then they're gone. But he's also in a horrendous position now electorally. He's fallen a lot in the polls over the last year, even since the last general election. And so it's by no means guaranteed that he would do very well in a general election until Brexit is out of the way, until the European question is out of the way. And then if Corbyn and his allies focus on the benefit issues, things like that actually the Blairites don't support. This is the problem, is you've got a civil war going on in the same party and things like getting out of NATO, which they don't support. Venezuela and Maduro, which the Blairites don't support. They're with the Americans. And if there was to be any kind of attempt at a war, the Blairites would vote for war. That's the sort of situation we're in. And Corbyn is up against this really strong phalanx within the party that are still just... it's not difficult to work out that they're loyal to Blair still because they say all the same things that Tony Blair says.
All the same things. It's the same old... It's the same old Blairites, as you said. It's the same old people. And
Blairites are in a majority in the party as a whole.
So deselect them then.
They're in a minority in the Parliamentary Labour Party. The same situation, I guess, is probably true to say within the Tory party, certainly in the cabinet, is that the Brexiteers and the no deal leavers are the majority in the Conservative Party as a whole, but they're not. That is not reflected in Parliament. So it just shows, really, that we've got a bit of a broken political system. And, you know, even if somebody like Corbyn gets elected, who is generally to the left, wants to do nationalisation of things like the railways, water, electricity, gas, this sort of thing.
Which he can't do inside the European Union, by the way.
Most impossible to get those things through.
Can I make that point, Tony? With the UK inside the European Union, Corbyn can't do any of that.
Another thing I'd like to bring up, if it's all right, is this business with the Chagos Islands, because I think that's really, really important. It's just the other day the European Court ruled, and of course this is another way of having a go at the Brits for Brexit, that the British took the Chagos Islanders off illegally. And of course the Chagos Islands are immensely important strategically in the Pacific for the US projection of power against China. And this is why this is also important. Anyone that's seen John Pilger's film The Coming War on China will know that the Americans have been making preparations for decades. I mean, we're talking about probably 50-60 years for a war with China, and which is why Diego Garcia, which is this massive US air base which has now completely taken over these islands in the Pacific, is so important. And that base, I would suggest, I mean, if we can go back to the story from a few years ago, is where the Malaysian airliner disappeared to. Now, it was heading to China with a whole bunch of people on board who had some very high-tech US technology, which they had been selling, attempting to sell to the Pentagon. And they were heading off to Beijing from Kuala Lumpur on that flight from Singapore. Area, and they were heading over. Headed off east over the off the a peninsula, the Singapore and Malaysian peninsula, and then they doubled back on themselves. We saw later radar traces, which were released a few days afterwards, that showed that they actually doubled back on themselves. This plane had not disappeared at all into some Bermuda Triangle. And then it did a zigzag pattern, which is the same pattern as the planes performed on 9/11. It was south of the coast of India, and then it went down the coast of India and headed off down and it was sighted off the coast of Mauritius that morning. And the only place it can really have been heading, Richie, with the fuel that it had on board, was Diego Garcia, almost certainly. It may have been being hacked and being flown remotely, or it might simply have been that the military had just radioed into the pilot and said, right, you need to just fly this way, because the military can do that, override what the civilian pilots do. So this place is very, very, I think, strategically important, and a great decision by the Europeans, even though by the European court, even though, you know, I'm basically a Brexiteer and don't agree with the European court. They've come up with the right thing this time.
Tony, but we're going to leave it there. Brilliant on that. I've not been following that story, so thanks for getting into that. I appreciate that. Let us know as soon as you know about this Ofcom decision. Yeah. I'm glad your station manager is supporting you, as well he should do. You're a rare breed. And I know how popular that programme is in Bristol with FM listeners all across Bristol listening to it, and people listening to it around the country and indeed around the world on the internet. It's a terrific programme.
Have we got a minute to talk about Shamima Begum again?
I'm in it, but I'm going to stop you at 60 seconds. Okay. So off you
right
go.
Up. There was an amazing story about MI5 being worried about Daesh cells in every major British city. Now, this is I picked this one up a couple of days ago on RT. This is what we've been warning of on the radio for months, and well, actually over a year now, is we've got a lot of people returning to this country that aren't even being interviewed by the police or MI5. These are fighters, and yet now they've picked on this poor girl, Shamima Begum, who wasn't a fighter at all, and saying, oh, she's going to have to be arrested. Well, of course, the reason I think that they want to arrest Shamima Begum and put her on trial is because she knows too much. She can start blabbing about the NATO intelligence people who were involved in recruiting her, a 15-year-old girl from a school in East London, and getting her over to get married at 15 years of age. Finally, the other thing, which is this week, which is related to all this Middle East stuff, is the banning of Hezbollah. Insane action by the Home Secretary, Shahid Javid, who's a Bristol boy. It's shame on him, because this is the government of Lebanon. And again, this is just kowtowing to the Israel lobby. And we had Hezbollah editor of the Hezbollah newspaper come to speak in Bristol a few years ago, Richie. Amazing guy. Fascinating insight into the whole of Middle East history. The first library in the world was in Lebanon. And he, you know, we know it. And that's really, I think, I'd like to finish, is that many of these people, the Lebanese, Hezbollah, etc., have got a real sense of history. The BBC and the Israel lobby want to erase that sense of history.
Yeah, I wish we had more time to get into Hezbollah, Tony. That's a really important story as well. Listen, I appreciate it. Folks, thisweek.org.uk, of course, bilderberg.org, if you want to know all there is to know about Bilderberg. Tony, you can hear Tony every Friday on BCFM's The Politics Show. Check it out. It's excellent. And we will keep our listeners updated after that Ofcom decision. Thanks, mate, for giving us your time today.
You'll be the first to know, Richie. God bless. Thanks.
You too, mate. Thanks a lot. Tony Gosling, a great friend and colleague there, live on the line from Bristol. Shocking that Ofcom took seriously that complaint by the so-called UK lawyers for Israel. But we'll find out that decision in due course when it does come out, and we'll let you know. These are very difficult times. Talked yesterday about media plurality and global media, getting rid of dozens and dozens and dozens of breakfast shows in local stations around the country. It's a very difficult times for independent media, believe you me. Coming up for 6:02, you are with the Richie Allen Show. Thanks for joining me. It's still kind of bright out there. Oh well, it's dusk then. It's more like dusk. But there's a grand stretch in the evenings. Irish listeners will smirk when they hear me saying that. Is that something your grandfather, your grandmother would have said many moons ago, and would have said habitually every spring? Ah, sure, there's a grand stretch in the evenings now. A grand stretch in the evenings now. Matt Landman of the Franken Skies film will join me shortly, live from Washington, D.C. I'm looking forward to speaking with him. If there's anything you'd like me to put to Matt, you can tweet it to me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Here's the Sex Pistols. Sex Pistols, Pretty Vacant on the Richie Allen Show. 6:05 it is for Wednesday the 27th of February 2019. Thanks for joining the programme. Good to be with you. Fascinating conversation with Tony Gosling before the music there. We'll get Tony back on when we get that Ofcom decision. I think it's been a couple of years, or just under a couple of years, since we spoke with our next guest. And I found him fascinating. And I found the film that he made, a film called Frankenskies. And if you haven't seen the film, if you don't know much about it, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will. But if you're new to it, go to the website frankenskiesthemovie.com. A fantastic film, an expose of the solar, even geoengineering agenda that I've been talking about to guests on this programme for many, many years. The film was timely. And for those of our listeners who are new to this, there is an abundance of evidence that there is a solar geoengineering agenda, that aerosols are being sprayed into the skies around the world, that maybe those doing it are convinced maybe that it is necessary to prevent climate change or to halt global warming. Compartmentalization, maybe, I don't know. But there are those of us who believe it might be a lot more sinister than that. My guest is a university graduate. He took a break from working in finance. And while he was on a break from working in finance, having graduated from university, that he began to notice this agenda. He began to notice the anomalies in weather patterns. He's fascinating. We're going to talk about this. We'll talk about EMF radiation. We'll talk about 5G and the rollout and much more with Matt Landman. Welcome back, Matt. How are you?
Hey, Richie, brother. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you on. Your life has changed, and it's kind of your life before Frankenskies came out, and since it, your lives are kind of unrecognisable. Things have changed for you now, Matt. A lot of recognition for the film, and the response to that has taken you off on, I suppose, a magical mystery tour. Life has been strange for you since the film came out.
Oh, yes, it has. It's a roller coaster. Once I had devoted my life to bringing forward the truth, to being an activist, it's been a wild ride. I moved from Vancouver, Canada, down to Arizona, down to southwest United States to bring awareness and have this protest and this conference and this concert to bring awareness to the launch of the solar geoengineering program publicly. There's an experiment unfolding to dim the sun, and I wanted to bring light to that and show our side of it. But as I moved down to Arizona, I witnessed in this small town that I was living in Sedona, Arizona, I witnessed the rollout of 5G, the next wave of cell phone technology. And as I was there, I saw in this small town that I was living in that had one cell tower, they were meeting in the city council to decide how they were going to erect 26 new towers with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of small cell towers throughout the town. So I learned about this 1 millimeter wave, and I learned about the dangers of 5G, and I'm now launching a clothing line to protect people from this harmful radiation.
Now, we'll talk about the clothing line later on, and I'm going to give you a bit of a grilling then, my friend. It's not going to be a grilling at all, but I am going to say it to you. I'm very interested in the clothing line. Clothes that you think might protect people from the harmful effects. We've met some people on this program over the years who've sold snake oil, and we're always on the lookout for people trying to sell us stuff that doesn't work. But I trust that you mean this, and I'm going to ask you later on about this clothing line. I'm very interested to hear about it. Now, you believe that there are at least 20,000 scientists. And I think you might be right, my friend. You think there might be 20,000 scientists around the world whom are not being heard on television and on radio, but 20,000 scientists who believe that 5G is harmful. Is that right?
Well, yes, and there's more than that. There's the independent, peer-reviewed scientific community. And the consensus is that this non-ionizing radiation has cumulative impacts. It's all about the cumulative damage and the proximity to what's emitting radiation. So if you live right next to a cell tower and you live there for a long time, the likelihood that you will have severe human health impacts are greater than if you live farther away and you have less cumulative exposure. The studies are there. If you look, the studies are there. But then you've got the telecom industry, and then they have their biased studies, and all they want to talk about is ionizing radiation, which is like from a nuclear power plant and what have you. Ionizing radiation heats. It heats the brain. It heats. And if it doesn't heat, they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, the non-ionizing radiation. This is what we don't hear about. Mm-hmm. On our, again, on our news bulletins and on our news broadcasts. So one of the first things I think that occurred to me when I heard about 5G and the claims that it's going to be marvellous, interconnectivity, it's going to be amazing for us all, you know, whatever, where we work, no matter what sector. What occurred to me was 4G is very quick. It's more than quick. It's more than quick enough. It's more than sufficient for the needs of 99.9% of people around the world anyway. There isn't any real, genuine need for this 5G, is there? 4G is fine. It's fast. Well, it does what we need.
Correct. Yeah, 4G is just fine. And to propagate the 4G technology, you don't need a cell tower in your neighborhood. You don't need one on your doorstep. You don't need one 500 feet from the next one. The 5G 1 millimeter wave, it's actually a military grade weaponized technology that was created when this active denial system was created. The 1 millimeter wave was created to form a frequency fence that burned people's skin. It's developed in the Middle East. So now this technology of the 1 millimeter carrier wave is being launched, deployed, and in the United States, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, they have claimed that cities and towns and states cannot take into consideration human health impacts while this deployment is being unleashed. So you've got activists and community members scrambling to try to bring this awareness to the zoning commissions, to the people that can actually make some sort of laws on the zoning restrictions to prevent these towers from going up on literally on your doorstep, in your front yard, on the sidewalk. And so there's this call to action. These activists are speaking up. I just spoke at a city council hearing in Sedona, Arizona, and then I just spoke in Marin County at another county board of supervisors meeting.
Hey, Matt, this is brilliant. Can I just stop you there? This is really, really, this is one of the reasons I was excited about having you back today. You're such a personable and well-spoken and well-presented man. You are. I'm not patronizing you. It's wonderful that you go to these meetings, because you'll be meeting people there, maybe Republicans, maybe Democrats, maybe people who never listen to alternative television or radio programs, and they're hearing it for the first time. So I'm fascinated, Matt, when you go to these meetings and you present your information, what sort of reaction do you get from Joe Public, from the ordinary folks, you know, who, as I said, would never hear this sort of stuff before?
Well, when I was in Arizona, which is a little more conservative, I was the only person that spoke. And the city council and the mayor, they didn't want to hear it. They said that their hands were tied. They didn't even hear the words that I spoke. It was as if I spoke another language. I said that they should set up an independent commission to evaluate the human health impacts. And they said, sorry, our hands are tied. We have to put up the towers. And I said, no, I'm not asking you to not put up the towers. I'm asking you to consider the human health impacts of this technology. And they say, oh, you had your 3 minutes to speak.
Wow.
You know, do you want to be escorted out of here by the police officer? And so then when I was in California, though, I lined up with 40 people, doctors and noteworthy people from the community. Everyone was older than me. I'm 38 years old. I was by far the youngest person to speak, but it was very, very well received. Marin is actually considering city ordinances and county ordinances, and I hope that they outright ban the 5G. They outright banned the 5G in Mill Valley, which is a city in this county, but it's all mansions. These are the rich people right outside of Silicon Valley.
How interesting. The wealthier neighbors, our wealthier friends and neighbors, have managed to keep it away from them in one area, but the rest of us have got to put up with it.
Exactly.
Jesus. Wow. How can any public servant, whether it be an assemblyman or woman or a mayor or a mayoress, how can they look at their constituents in the eye and say, we're just going to put these towers in and we're not going to commission a health impact study to find out what it's going to do to you. How can they do that?
Well, they've spent their lives trusting in authority. You've got these different environmental agencies that are supposed to be looking out for our best interest. Well, as we know, science can and has been bought. You've got studies that come out by Coca-Cola, for instance, that are funded by Coca-Cola,
yeah,
that say that Coca-Cola is more hydrating than water. All right, you've got to take a step back and learn to take truth as the authority rather than authority as the truth. Okay. And another thing is, this radiation is invisible. All right, if it was natural gas and you could smell it, if it emitted some pink haze or something like that, you know, if people could actually grasp, if it was tangible, and if it didn't have such cumulative impacts where over time you develop a brain tumor, over time your endocrine system is disrupted, or over time you get depressed and suicidal, over time you have leukemia, if it wasn't so cumulative, if it was immediate and people were just dropping on the streets with nosebleeds and what have you, they'd be able to realize the impacts and know how severe they are and not turn a blind eye. But they've been able to pass the buck to the people who are supposed to be looking out for them, who are actually paid off by the telecom industry.
You make a fantastic point there, Matt. I've heard this before when I've talked about these things. I sometimes get to meet people who've heard of me through a friend, but they don't listen. They're not interested in listening to the program. And they will say things like that. They will, you know, because non-ionizing radiation, I might bring it up. I might say, you know, the smartphones are dangerous and 5G is dangerous. And you've made a great point there. They will say things like, well, you know, we're exposed to the exhaust fumes from cars. I'm sure over time those exhaust fumes do us no good, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it might take you, if you're right, Richie, it would take years for this stuff to kill us anyway. That's a stupid way of thinking, isn't it? But that's the way people think.
Well, it really is. And they don't want to think that anybody is not looking out for their best interest. But for the 5G, so I pride myself in an activist in the ability to simplify things and to meet people on a level where they can recognize the truth. And for the 5G, there's a lot of different instances where I can explain the story. So, for instance, the TSA body scanners, the body scanners at the airport are 1 millimeter wave technology. And they've been pulled from airports, especially in Europe. But this 1 millimeter wave technology has been supposedly harming these TSA employees, and they've had these cancer pockets, and they're claiming to be coming sick from this. But most importantly is, we have the right to opt out. We can get a pat down, and we cannot be exposed to this 1 millimeter wave technology for that 3 seconds when we walk through the body scanner. Well, this same 1 millimeter size wave, the same technology, is set to propagate and be everywhere. Out front of our home, everywhere we go, we'll be exposed to this 1 millimeter wave 24 hours a day. And we don't have any rights now. We can't opt out. We have the right to a safe and healthy living environment. And we have the right to a say in environmental decision making. So where did our rights go? And where's this independent, unbiased, peer-reviewed research? And why aren't we being heard?
Really important point again, Matt, about the scanners at the airports. People can choose to be patted down by a security guard. You don't have to go through them. 1 millimeter wave. With the 5G, you have no choice. Can you explain, and I know you'll be able to do this, in language that a numpty like me can understand, what is 1 millimeter wave, and why should we, first of all, know about it, and what can it do? What are the implications of it for us? What's 1 millimeter wave technology?
Okay, so a millimeter size wave. So a penny is 1.5 millimeters. So these are invisible waves less than the width of a penny. And now our technology is vastly larger than that, okay? This is on the radio frequency spectrum, and this is essentially the smallest wave in the radio frequency spectrum. Radio frequencies, the speed at which they are essentially light. Radio frequencies and light travel at 186,000 miles per second. To put that into perspective, sound is at 760 miles per hour. So these waves that are light waves, these radio frequency waves, they carry information. Light carries information. So AM waves, FM waves, they carry information. But AM waves are 1,000 feet tall. FM waves are 10 feet tall. The current cell phone technology that we use is drastically larger than 1 millimeter in size. We have our entire biology is impacted by frequency. Our circadian rhythm, it tunes to the Schumann resonance of the earth, which is 7.83 hertz. Our hearts, our brains, all of our organs, they are in concert with each other, tuned to frequency. Okay, if you learn about binaural beats, if you learn about Joseph Goebbels and the 432, 440 hertz, if you learn about Royal Raymond Rife and how different frequencies can be tuned to destroy viruses, you can learn how influenceable and how adjustable we are to frequency. Now, these 1 millimeter size waves, they are in this spectrum that can actually impact our biology. They can cause blood-brain barrier permeability, but especially what happens, which I'll wrap this up really quick, what happens is our circadian rhythm gets completely disrupted. Our brain, our endocrine system, our glands in our brain, our pineal glands, our bodies and our brains perceive this invisible frequency as light, okay? Very bright light. And that's the problem with these LED street lamps and blue light. I encourage people to get blue light filters on your phone and your tablets and your computers and get away from these LED street lamps and don't have LED in your home, because the blue light is actually really harmful. What it's telling your body is you're in bright, bright sunlight. So we have this circadian rhythm. Our bodies are tuned to the frequency of the earth. And when the sun goes down and when the sun is up, our bodies know. And we have this rhythm when we release different hormones, we release serotonin, melatonin in our brain. All these things are set on a clock, okay? And if you are around this 1 millimeter size wave, or if your head is right next to your smartphone when you're sleeping, or if you're looking at these blue lights right before you go to bed, or your head is right next to your Wi-Fi or your smart meter, these small 1 millimeter waves disrupt the chemistry in your brain. So in the United States, the National Institute of Health, they did this research study because they couldn't figure out why there was a statistical anomaly with these utility workers. Utility workers working on cell towers had a statistical anomaly where the suicide workers were actually committing suicide to the tune of 10%, a random sample. And 10% of these utility workers were actually committing suicide. And they determined that their brains were being impacted, that they couldn't produce melatonin, serotonin, dopamine, because their brain's cycle, which is set to the clock of the earth. So when the sun goes down, your brain thinks it's nighttime. Well, if you're around this 1 millimeter wave, your body cannot adjust and it thinks that it's bright light all the time. So people get depressed and people have all these other hormonal issues because your entire system gets impacted and disrupted, and then things happen like sickness and fatigue and leukemia, cancer. But especially I want people to take a look at that study because the proof is in the pudding, okay? You've got the National Institute of Health, NIH, out of the United States, and 10% of the random sample committed suicide.
You know, anybody who's got a child, child suicide and child self-harm and child depression is allegedly up all over the world. And in the UK, we're being told it's growing exponentially. And I think this is coinciding with children's use of smartphones and tablets. And we know that children are addicted to these things. And there's a bit of an epidemic. I want to remind our listeners, Matt Landman is live on the line today. It's a real pleasure to have Matt back on the programme. He's the activist behind the excellent Frankenskies film. Go to frankenskiesthemovie.com. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you rent a copy of it or you buy it. It's really important stuff, this. Paul has tweeted, we've had a lot of tweets on this, it's fair to say, but Paul has tweeted, Richie, ask Matt if there is a way to measure the strength of 5G emissions. This is a good question, this, because I know all about, I mean, I learned about a Geiger counter when I was in school, Geiger counter to measure radiation. Can anything measure 5G at all? Is there a device that we know of?
Well, there are radio frequency meters and EMF field meters, and I have bought a couple, and I highly recommend anybody who's listening who wants to get an understanding of this radio frequency radiation, this non-ionizing radiation that we are being exposed to, and the levels that we are being exposed to are going to increase in our lifetime drastically, okay? And also, if you're my age, I'm 38 years old. If you're anywhere close to my age, you did not grow up in this toxic environment. You were not exposed to these high levels, especially 24 hours a day. Okay, to answer your question, I am not aware of a meter that measures 5G. 5G has yet to be completely deployed in the United States. So the meters right now, I don't think that they can measure that size frequency of waves, but I can only assume that as the technology is adopted and it's deployed full scale this and next year in the United States that we'll have meters. But in the interim, you can get a meter that measures the already existing radio frequency radiation, and you can see the impacts and how much your phone is putting off. I witnessed how much my phone was putting off, and I regressed in technology and got a slighter dumb phone, and I've mitigated how much radiation me and my family are now being exposed to.
And your life is all the better for it, because you're not reaching for the bloody smartphone every couple of minutes to see have you got a message. We don't need to live like that. Loads of tweets. Delroy tweets, thank Matt for the technical information on frequency and blue light. Thanks for the tweet, Delroy. Cartoon Drunk tweets, that might be the real motive behind 5G, or one of the motives, to cause suicide, to reduce world population under UN Agenda 21 depopulation program. In This Together, that's @_InThisTogether tweets, or sterilization, is that part of it as well? Well, I know that carrying smartphones around, it's proven beyond any doubt, carrying even old mobile phones has an impact on male fertility. There is no doubt about that. That's admitted, that's accepted by most health experts. Our guest is Matt Landman. It's coming up for 27 minutes past the hour. Now, you are crowdfunding at the moment because you want to develop a line of clothing that you think can protect people against the impact of non-ionizing radiation. Talk to us about that, Matt. How did this come about?
Well, I want to have a non-violent, peaceful approach to this, and I can only do so much in my local community, going to the city council and asking for zoning restrictions on these towers. Once the towers are put up, it's going to be a lot harder to take them down. So I want to protect myself, my family, my peers, anybody who's embodying this truth. And yes, I do feel it's a depopulation agenda. The size of these waves, especially, but if you look at the radiation that the phones are already putting off, the studies show that sperm swim in circles and don't swim straight lines. The impacts that I see happening, and I don't want to be a fearmonger, but if you are conceived and born and raised in this toxic environment, I believe you'll be infertile. I believe it's a transhumanism agenda kind of push to make the next generation sterile, and the next generation will likely not be able to conceive if they're in this environment. So in my research, I found, and it's been unbelievable to learn, that in the country of China, the people of China have adopted this because they're communist and they don't want children coming in with birth defects and what have you. They require pregnant women to wear these aprons that are either lined with 100% silver or steel thread or nickel or copper. So copper, nickel, steel, and silver, it actually deflects these small waves. The radiation is deflected. I've done multiple experiments. You can check out my crowdfund where I've done experiments with the fabric, the silver fabric especially. The crowdfund is at gofundme.com/protectionclothing. And I'm going to be naming the clothing line Sparrow, S-P-E-R-O, which is Latin for hope. Okay. But what happens when you're wearing this silver clothing, which I'm making men's underwear, I'm making maternity outfits for pregnant women, I'm going to be making jackets, I'm going to be making sweatshirts, hooded sweatshirts, hats, all sorts of clothing that is stylish, that is cool, that can be brought to the masses, affordable as well. But what it is it bounces off the radiation. So you can actually have a cell phone case made out of this where the radiation is brought down to a level that's 1% of the radiation you're experiencing without the protection, but you still have cell phone service. So once we get into a 5G environment, you're going to want to protect yourself. And I hope that this idea is brought into the consciousness, that it's adopted, that it's copied, that all sorts of companies come in. I don't care about the money. I just want a future where we can protect ourselves and not be disempowered and in this victimhood frequency, where we can be empowered activists, bringing the change and bringing this light of truth forward to the next generation.
It sounds great to me, Matt, as an idea. Just before you give us the website where people can go and have a look at it, presumably, you know, through the funding of it, presumably through any profits made from it, you'll be able to obviously use that to pursue other films and other projects then.
Well, yes, I'm making a new film about frequency. It's past, present, and future. All the way back to Roy Raymond Rife, Nikola Tesla, Joseph Goebbels, all of these things in our history that we're not taught about in school because the powers that be don't want us to learn about frequency, even though we are beings of frequency and everything we operate in is impacted by frequency. If you learn about binaural beats, you can learn about how sensitive we are as beings of frequency, all right? And if you learn about how EMF fields and radio frequency radiation actually causes blood-brain barrier permeability and leakage, you can see the connection to geoengineering and chemtrails and how these aerosols of metallics are sprayed, but they can't get past our blood-brain barrier. But if we're living in this environment, this toxic environment of non-ionizing radiation, you'll see the connection here. So I encourage people to please just take a look at the GoFundMe. There's so much research I put in there on rats' brains and how people wear their cell phone in their bra and they have a cell phone-shaped tumor there already. Okay, this is important information for people to pass on and to learn about because you are not going to be told this in the mainstream controlled media. So check out my GoFundMe.com/protectionclothing. I've yet to put up the website for sparrowprotectionclothing.com, and I've also bought sparrowapparel.com. And yes, all of the profits from this company will be rolled into activism. I'm an activist for life. So my next film, which is called Altered, which will go into the future of it all and how we're being pushed into this weird transhumanism ideology where I think that this dystopian reality of preventing people from having children to push them into this live forever by transferring your consciousness into a cyborg clone version of yourself, this is a dystopian reality we may be facing in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
So to be able to empower ourselves and to be able to protect our children and the infants and the unborn children and when people are pregnant and what have you, to protect them with silver clothing and risk mitigation strategies like getting a meter and knowing about this technology and opting out of your smart meter and getting a blue light filter on your devices and putting your phone and tablet on airplane mode, you wouldn't believe the health impacts that you can actually mitigate and you can live a happy and healthy life by getting out in nature, tuning in to the Schumann's Resonance and learning these things. So please check out the crowdfund, share it. Also check out my website, actualactivists.com. And yes, frankenskiesthemovie.com. If you haven't seen Frankenskies, it's available to the world for free. It's still getting traction. People are still contacting me for DVDs to have local screenings, which I encourage. And if you want to do a local screening, I'll send you a DVD for free. Also, Richie, send me your address.
Hey, listen, do me a favor. Happily. Stop with this free stuff. I'm saying to my I'm serious. I'm saying to my listeners, if you want to get a copy of the DVD from Matt to show to your neighbors or whatever, even though he is giving it for free, send him $5. $5 is not going to kill you. If you can afford $10, send him $10. You know, it's a wonderful thing that you've got that attitude. I really endorse that. But you know, making the films and producing other films is not free. So I would encourage people, if you do watch, even if you watch it online, send a couple of bucks to the GoFundMe for the clothing development. Matt is on Twitter as well. It's at Landman808, and of course he's on Facebook. This was a big week for big stories around genetically modified food and weed killers and pesticides. Fair play. I mean, when I say fair play, we demonize and we criticize the mainstream media often. I mean, I spend most of my time doing it. But in fairness to the media, they have been quick to talk about the fact that glyphosate has shown up in 95% of wines and beers. Matt, what are the implications for those of us, including myself, who like a glass of wine, at the news that glyphosate is showing up in 95% of our alcoholic beverages?
Well, there was a court case recently that a gentleman won because he had cancer, and now it is a carcinogen, this glyphosate, this Roundup herbicide by Monsanto. And come to find out, this herbicide, it actually breaks down your blood-brain barrier, which means if you're being exposed to aluminum in your deodorants or aluminum in your air from the geoengineering chemtrails program, that this aluminum is now going to be able to get past your blood-brain barrier, get into your brain, and cause dementia and Alzheimer's and all these things. I encourage people, if you want to have that glass of wine, don't live in fear, but learn about chelation, learn about getting these heavy metals out of your body, adopt a lifestyle where you're going to the sauna often, or you're learning about chelation through different plants and minerals, and get mineralized. Because when your body is mineralized and you've got the correct minerals and you're doing supplements like Shilajit, which is an ancient mineral pitch, then your body's not absorbing all these toxic metals from your environment, thinking that it's something like calcium or something good for your bones because you're up to speed with your health, okay? Read your ingredients, get up to speed with your health, and these things won't impact you as bad. Also, glyphosate is now in vaccines. Don't get the flu shot. Don't get vaccinated. Research ingredients before you inject yourself or your child with vaccinations, because these ingredients are drastically harmful. They're obviously harmful. And when glyphosate, a carcinogen and herbicide plant killer, is showing up in vaccines, you've got to ask questions.
You've got to ask why. And there will be listeners listening to this who are, again, who mostly get their news from mainstream sources. And they listen to this program either out of morbid curiosity or they just want to hear what's being said, you know, to poke fun at it. Why would anybody put glyphosate into a vaccine? Why is glyphosate showing up in vaccines?
Well, I believe it's to break down the blood-brain barrier to get these toxic ingredients that are already in vaccines, such as aluminum, such as mercury, such as formaldehyde, such as another person's DNA, okay? You get this vaccine and you end up with autoimmune disorder or some ailment or something further down the line that just pops up. You're injecting yourself with someone else's DNA, maybe a different sex than you are, okay? So you've got to ask these questions. I'd much rather get the flu than the flu shot, and I have never gotten the flu shot, and I never will, and I haven't gotten the flu in 20 years. So, I mean, I don't know what all this fear is over all these ailments. And also, do your research. Do your research on measles, on polio, on all these things that you're being fear-mongered into. These things are not life-threatening. If you know about fevers and you know how to maintain your health, these ailments are not life-threatening, but the vaccination is life-threatening, okay? Research sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome did not exist in Japan until they introduced this vaccine regimen schedule that we now have, okay? The blood-brain barrier, it is developed in the human body at 18 months. So if you have a child, do a little research, and if you really are hard set on getting vaccines, wait till a year and a half of age when you're beautiful baby has developed a blood-brain barrier, and these toxins aren't going to just go straight to their brain and cause permanent issues.
Do you think we'll ever reach a time? You said you're 38. I'm 40. I think I turned 44 on, was it New Year's Eve? Yeah. I am 44. I'm not an eternal pessimist. I'm not. I'm a very happy-go-lucky type of person, and I mostly see the good in people and not the bad in them. But I think I'll be 65, 66, and I think I'll still be talking to you in terms of what more do we need to do to get people to pay attention to this stuff. I'm not sure we can stop it, Matt. That's an awful thing to say to an activist like yourself, you know, who's doing his best to raise awareness. I'm not sure what we can do. I think it's almost like critical mass, where people are so, their personalities have changed. People are not the way people used to be so many years ago. People are so much more inward looking, so much more narcissistic now. And I don't blame them. I blame external environmental factors, which you've just brilliantly described there, for making people like that. And I just think, what can we do to reach them? Is it impossible to reach people who've become gripped by the phones and the technology, who've become gripped by eating GMO foods, who, you know, all that sort of stuff? Are they unreachable, these people?
So all hope is not lost. And I see where you're coming from, and I'm with you right there, brother. I am right there with you. And we are actually, you and I and other people, everyone out there embodying this truth and honoring truth with integrity by speaking it and living it and sharing it with their friends and family without being in fear of this ridicule psychology that's pressed upon us through our peers and the media. Okay, we are planting seeds. We are planting seeds that we may never see come to fruition, okay? These seeds may flower and germinate years after our death, but the people that are being programmed are easily snapped out of it. It's just a timely, it just takes time, okay? And it takes everyone playing their part, and also it takes us not giving in to what we're told is going on through the media, okay? If I just watched mainstream media, I would have given up by now. But I get out there in the world. I make eye contact with people. I hand them free DVDs. I hand them flyers. And I make these interactions. I have these beautiful interactions with people at farmers markets, out there in the world. And they are so excited about the truth. And I say, oh, wow, how'd you know about chemtrails? How'd you know about that? And they say, I'm not on social media. I'm not on the internet. But I'm not stupid. I see what's going on, and I know, and I can feel it, because people are going deep, and they are literally growing their intuition, okay? Intuition is developed. This is something that you cultivate, and people are – their frequency is rising. And we're becoming like this new breed of elevated humans, but not everybody, right? But I do think that we will see a shift. I think the more the dark exposes itself, the more that the light can be seen. You know, we live in this world of duality. There's duality. There's up, down, left, right, light, dark, all right? And the more that the dark exposes itself, the more that we can realize, well, I'm not that. So what am I? I think I'm part of the light. And maybe I'm here to help that light shine and to plant some seeds and to look out for the next generation as caretakers of this realm.
Brilliant way to leave it today, Matt. Before we do, though, please give us the activist website details again. I've already said frankenskiesthemovie.com, and I repeat, if you do take a copy of the film, if you watch it online, send Matt a few bucks, send him what you can afford. You've got to do that with filmmakers making these films. Give us those websites again and the crowdfunding one.
And thanks for that, Richie, and thanks so much for what you're doing. Yes, please, actual activists, plural, because we're all involved here. Actualactivists.com. All right. Also, frankenskiesthemovie.com. Also, my name is Matt Landman. I'm on YouTube, Matt Landman. I'm on Twitter. Look me up, Matt Landman. Facebook, Matt Landman. On Facebook, I've got 37,000 followers. I get very strict censorship, but still, I appreciate any support. Send me a message. Show me you're there. Share my stuff. Give me some love, and I'll support you just the same. If you haven't seen the film Frankenskies, if you think you know everything about truth or geoengineering or whatever, please still take a look. I promise you'll learn something. Pass it on. It's so important. It's so important as a timestamp of where we are and where we were when the film was released in 2017. Okay, we're going into a dystopian reality where the powers that be want to control our sunlight and dim our sun, telling us that we need it under this guise of this global warming hoax. Okay, so please show your support, and the crowdfund for the protection clothing is gofundme.com/protection clothing. Take a look at the research. Take a look at the prototype that I have there of the sweatshirt that I designed and made that's lined with copper with 100% silver hood. Okay, take a look at the research out there. It is real, and we can protect ourselves, and we can take this truth under our own hand, and we don't have to be victims, all right? Much love to everybody listening out there. And also, I want everyone to know, when we're looking at these forest fires into this dystopian reality, we can make it rain. We can make windstorms over fire, or we can make it rain on top of this fire. We have the technology. If you watch Frankenskies, you can see the historical chronological timeline where we can make it rain since 1920. Okay, so don't forget about that, and keep it simple when you're conveying this message to people who are new to this. Okay, the weather is controlled. Thank you so much, Richie.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry that you lost a lot of your shows and that your channel was taken down, but I think that's just gives us the courage and invigoration to keep on pushing forward.
It certainly does, and don't leave it so long before you come back. Good luck with the initiatives going forward, Matt, and thanks for your generosity and your humility. I really love that. I love meeting people giving stuff away, although I say to people, don't take it, don't take that generosity, spare a couple of bucks, and I look forward to your new films coming out in the very near future, and we'll promote the hell out of them when they do come out. Godspeed to you, mate. Look after yourself, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Matt. Matt Landman there, live on the line. Do check out the websites that Matt gave us. I'm going to tweet them out, and I'm going to get my mate Rog to put them on our Facebook page as well. Very important that. Yeah, very generous guy is Matt. But I'm going to repeat it. You know, if somebody puts a book online talking about these subjects, and if it's good, and Frankenskies is an excellent production, by the way, it really is, and you watch it and you get value from it, well, send a couple of bob, you know. If you can, that is. Not all of us can, and I appreciate that as well. It's coming up for 14 minutes to the top of the hour. Thanks again to Matt Landman. Now, I'm having a few technical problems here today. They're very minor, by the way. But I don't think I'll be able to repeat tonight's programme online. You see, normally, if you go on the Richie Allen website and you press play on the player, the most recent live programme will be playing over and over and over again. I think I won't be able to do that later. There's a big memory issue with there's like a dozen. If you've seen pictures of the studio, there's like 5-6 computers in here running. But a very important one, which has my player on, is just giving me all sorts of jip today. And I've got to get it looked at. It's not going to stop me broadcasting tomorrow, don't panic, or anything like it. I can broadcast without it. I don't need it to broadcast. But there's an issue with me repeating stuff. I've also not been able to use the player to play my audio tonight in my news roundup. I had to find another way to do that. And it went okay. There weren't any problems in the monologue segment earlier. But I don't think I'll be able to repeat. The programme, when it does end in about 10 minutes' time, will be on podcast and it will be on YouTube, but it won't be playing overnight. Now, I know I get listeners coming into the end of programmes and then they hang around and they wait for 7 o'clock or they wait for 8 o'clock and they go, right, I'll pick it up again. It probably won't be repeating overnight, probably not. So I'm just giving you the heads up on that. I'm also not able to get online. Oh, I am. It's letting me get online. Hang on a second. Because you've been tweeting me during the conversation with Matt. But I've not been able to see the tweets momentarily, but I can now, I think. I think it's righted itself. Not bad. Good stuff. Very interesting guy, Matt, isn't he? Very good guy. I really like Matt Landman. 2 years since he was on the programme. He came on when Frankenskies came out. Thanks to Faisal for putting those websites on a tweet. They're actualactivists.com. Is the website. William tweets, interesting stuff, Richie. Matt has himself a new follower. I think you might be right about the boat having already sailed, though. We fight on anyway. The point I make about that, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly. Ned Flanders. Negative Nelly. I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly. I have friends. Not many. I'm not in regular contact with my friends from my Irish friends, my Waterford friends. I'm in contact with some of them. They, by and large, they think that it's a load of bollocks. That's what they think. And I've learned to be humble. I used to be very arrogant. Because anger, you know, because you know it's happening. You know that it's happening because you've seen the evidence, not the hearsay, not the conjecture, but you've seen the actual evidence. So you know it's happening. So you tend to get angry. And there are times when you get aggressive with people whom you like a lot or love. I moved away from that a long time ago. If they're not interested, they're not interested. But the reason I'm a negative Nelly is because they're not interested. And they don't want to hear it. And that's just the way it is. And I think that's the vast majority of people. I think there are so many distractions for people. Not just the age-old distractions of having to go to work, having to earn the right to live by enslaving yourself to another member of your race. Now, I know this is not new. I've said this a million times. But we are the only creatures. We're the only creatures on God's green earth, so we are, that we must indebt ourselves. We must give ourselves over to another member of our species in order to earn enough, excuse me, to live. No other creature has to do that. Yes, animals in the animal kingdom, they've got to go out and forage and they've got to go out and find food and they've got to build shelter for themselves. But they don't have to do that under the supervision of another member of their species. And they don't get thrown out of their homes because they can't pay their rent or their mortgage. So that's a major distraction. It's a major barrier to people understanding that all is not as it seems. That's barrier number one. Barrier number two then is the distraction of technology, the impact that technology has on people and people's ability to disseminate information. You know, to understand information, to break it down, not to disseminate, what am I saying? But to make sense of what they're hearing and seeing. You know, bread and circuses and all of that. So it's very difficult with people. And I gave up trying to get through to people a second time. The minute people said to me, it's a load of bollocks and you are a load of bollocks, I don't get annoyed. I do not get offended. I say, all right, fair enough. You're not interested, fair enough. That's your right. Let's have a beer. Let's talk about something else. Let's find some common ground. Did you see the match last night? There you are. Somebody tweeted me about Tommy Robinson and I can't find it. And I'm sorry, I was looking at it on my own phone. If I can find a tweet, was somebody giving me a bit of stick about Tommy Robinson? And I want to read it because, you know, I do like reading out criticism when I can find it. But I can't find it now. Yeah, somebody tweeted me saying that I was maybe not right. Maybe I should have mentioned Tommy Robinson's film and all that. Listen, I have made my feelings very clear on the likes of Tommy Robinson. What he is and how he serves the system that he claims to be so much in opposition to. He's actually the greatest system server, or he's a great example of what a system server is Tommy Robinson, Tommy who calls himself a Zionist. You know, it's not that I'm not for changing my opinion, but I've been very clear about it. I've also been very clear in saying that I don't agree with Facebook deleting Tommy Robinson's page, Stephen Yaxley Lennon. I don't agree with PayPal saying that they will work to prevent people from donating money to people like Tommy Robinson. If you're fucking thick enough to give money to a goon like Tommy Robinson, you should be able to do that. And PayPal should not be able to prevent that from happening. You see, I do genuinely believe in free speech for everybody, including those whom I most vehemently disagree with. Tommy Robinson is a goon. He's a thug. It's all he ever was and all he ever will be. And while the followers of Tommy Robinson have genuine grievances about migration, about the impact of mass migration on the economy, about the impact of it on vital public services, about the impact of it on their employment opportunities, I understand all this stuff. I understand all this stuff. I understand the fears that people have about radicalisation among some young Pakistani men. I totally understand all this. When people say he's a shill, they're deaf. You've obviously not been listening to me. I've been talking about these things long before Tommy Robinson even founded the English Defence League. But Robinson is a system server because he serves the us versus them paradigm. The right versus left, Muslims versus Christians. And sadly, that's all too simplistic. It's about much, much more than that. And when you call yourself a Zionist, well, you know, I'm not a racist, but I'm a Zionist. But there is no more racist individual on planet Earth at the moment than a Zionist. So I'm going to give up responding to these tweets and questions about Tommy Robinson. I interviewed Robinson on the radio a few years ago in Spain. I made mincemeat out of the man. I embarrassed him. He had nothing to say. He couldn't answer basic questions that I put to him about politics, about political parties. He was claiming expertise in certain things. I asked him questions to embarrass him. I deliberately set out to embarrass and humiliate him on the programme. I do admit that. It was all too easy. And on another programme, I put Tommy Robinson on with Anjan Chowdhury, and Chowdhury annihilated Robinson. Took him to the cleaners. He's a moron. He's a movie of the week. And he's supported by Zionist groups in Israel. He's supported by the likes of Steve Bannon and these people and other people like that. And you have to wonder why. Because it's to keep people engaged in us versus them, left versus right. Tommy's just the latest moron in a long line of morons. You can name them. You know, the Ann Cool. He's just a male version of somebody like Ann Coulter. Although she's more sophisticated, has a better understanding of broadcasting. He calls himself a journalist. It's an affront to real journalists to have a little thug like him say he's not a journalist. He's an agitator and a movie of the week, and that's all he'll ever be. And that's not to say that his followers, as I said, have genuine concerns about things that are happening. And the things they are concerned about are happening. But the likes of Robinson is not digging down into why those things are happening and who those things benefit in the long run. No. And John Sweeney's the biggest moron of all time. The Panorama presenter. I have no doubt about that. But the BBC, rotten to the core and all as it is, will find it very easy to expose Tommy Robinson as a bully, as a thug, and as a genuine racist, because he fucking is. It's as simple as that. However bad the BBC is, and I'm sure it's full of thugs of its own and racists of its own, but it's very easy to figure out who Tommy Robinson is. Going to leave you and love you with that. Thanks to Matt Landman. Thank you, Matt. And a big shout out to Tony Gosling as well from the Politics Show at BCFM. I'm going to leave you with some Jimi Hendrix. I just fancy a bit of it. I'll be back with you again tomorrow, 5 p.m. UK time, with Thursday's Richie Allen Show. This programme was produced, edited, and introduced by me. Bye now.